This week in KMA Land, Mills County Supervisors candidates featured in forum. Page County candidates forum set for next week. Budget-related action dominates KMA Land meetings. DOT unveils Highway 259 roundabout plan, plus an update at the Statehouse. I'm Mike Peterson. Candidates in a hotly contested Mills County Supervisors race weighed in on a variety of issues at a special event last weekend. Three candidates running for the Supervisors' GOP nomination appeared at a special forum in Malvern last Saturday, sponsored by the Mills County Republican Party. Sandy Winton, Dave Farmer, and Peter Beckner are seeking the position vacated by Richard Crouch, who is not running for re-election. With no other candidates on the ballot for the June primaries, the winner of the GOP race will likely be uncontested in the November general elections. One of the topics drawing the most questions from constituents in attendance was how the candidates would reduce spending and provide property tax relief. Farmer, who has lived in Mills County for nearly 50 years and works in the packing house industry with Jarvis Products, says it'll likely take addressing compensation for county employees and elected officials.
We may have to cut wages in the county and or positions. The salaries of all the departments need to be looked at very carefully, and the benefits that these physicians get. I think that we're going to have to start there, and I would actually like to improve the infrastructure in the county and bring in new businesses to create more revenue.
Winton has lived in Mills County since 2003 and has a variety of management experiences, including serving as director of marketing at the 509th Services Squadron at Wipen Air Force Base and managing multiple real estate projects. Winton says she hopes to meet with each department head to better identify potential efficiencies and cost savings.
Learning what is helping them, what is working for them, what's not working for them, seeing where there's some inefficiencies to see if there's some technology updates that could streamline things, make things cheaper for that specific department to run. But that takes a few minutes to go into each department and learn them, to learn what makes their department tick.
Beckner has lived in Mills County since 2006 and has worked with Union Pacific Railroad since 2005, currently serving as a train dispatcher. Emphasizing the need to balance providing essential services with cutting spending, Beckner says he would like to see smaller year-over-year spending increases from the county.
We've got to get the situation under control. I think we can tailor this back and start moving forward by just stopping growth, or at least keeping it to 1% a year. We can't keep seeing the 5% growth in spending that we've been seeing over the past few years.
While noting he still has a lot to learn before targeting specific budget line items, Farmer says he would prefer departments start their budgets at zero and build from there.
I would like to start each department with a zero budget. Put everything in front of the board other than your consumables. But any spending outside of consumables for the department, I think they should be in front of the board, and maybe they already are. I've got to learn a lot. As far as specifics, items that need to be cut, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm not exactly sure what the board can cut, but I'm ready to learn.
All three supervisor candidates indicated while reducing spending is the top priority, increasing the county's tax base, particularly commercial or an industrial, is another priority. Winton says one of the struggles in getting more development on the west end of the county is flooding concerns along the Missouri River.
We have had so many companies come in wanting to move in across from Loves and BP, and they are afraid to because of the levee situation, because of the flooding. Until we can get our levees certified, which is millions and millions and millions, and more millions on top of that, to do the certification for the levee, it's going to be hard to attract industry and business to that part of the corridor.
Winton and Beckner will also ask questions related to county supervisor pay. Saying he wasn't doing it for the money, Beckner notes he would be in favor of the Board of Supervisors expanding to 5 members, utilizing the same amount of dollars allocated to the positions now.
Put 5 people on the board and get better representation across the county. I think there's a huge appetite for that. I talked to a lot of people, and a lot of people have voiced concerns about not having representation on the east side of the county. They feel like all the representation comes from Glenwood, and I'd be all for that.
As some of the other topics addressed during the forum included the Lust Hills landfill, transparency from the Board of Supervisors, county zoning and renewable energy, public health, and keeping a small town feel. Well, not to be outdone, Peach County has its own live version of Meet the Candidates next week. Members of the newly formed Southwest Iowa Republican Women's Group hold a candidates forum Tuesday evening at 7 at the Page County Courthouse's Page Room in Clarinda. Carla Edwards chairs the organization. Edwards tells KMA News all nine supervisors' candidates are expected to appear and answer a series of questions during the forum.
We have a few questions that we're going to ask each candidate, and to, you know, a little bit of a time constraint, so each will have about 3 minutes to answer each question. And just a good opportunity to get to know each of the candidates.
Edwards says the forum is designed to inform the county's voters on each of the candidates.
You know, to give you more information at where they each of them stand and, you know, get to know each candidate as well as our current supervisors. You know, just give that opportunity to come and meet everybody.
Six of the nine candidates are in contested races for GOP nominations in the June Iowa primary. Three candidates seek the 4th District Supervisor's seat, incumbent Judy Clark and challengers Jamie Shore and Dennis Boger. Two candidates seek the District 3 Supervisor's spot, Seth Stimson and Jeff Brownfield. Two other candidates are running a District 1, former Supervisor Alan Armstrong and Mike Anderson. Incumbents Todd Maher in District 2 and Brian Rogers in District 5 are unchallenged for re-election in the Republican primary. No Democrats are registered for county office in the June primary. County Attorney Jim Varley serves as moderator for Tuesday's forum. Budget work topped the agendas of many supervisors, city council, and school board meetings this week. By a 2-1 vote Tuesday morning, the Mills County Board of Supervisors approved the county's budget for fiscal year 2027, which begins July 1st. The move follows the second public hearing of the budget, which included an urban property tax rate of roughly $5.89 per $1,000 valuation, a nearly 22-cent decrease from the current fiscal year. Supervisor Jack Sayers cast a lone dissenting vote. Sayers says while he understands the county needs money to provide good services, he feels the county's property tax asking is still too high.
I like having good services. I like having a short wait time for the treasurer's office. I like having a large public health that provides services. I like having a lot of these things. What I don't like having is Mills County having the current, this year, ninth highest tax rate for a county in the state of Iowa. I have some concerns with that. I don't think a top 10 for high taxes is where we'd like to be.
During the public hearing, the board also heard comments from Chris Whitey. While acknowledging the county's proposed expenditures are a little over a 1% decrease from the current year, Whitey says the county needs to take a more aggressive approach on reducing spending.
I would like to see a 10% reduction in the upcoming year budget. And if we adjusted that for inflation, that means you would have to cut about 6.6%. So if you did that, and the budget in my mind for expenditures would be $26 million as opposed to your $28 million, that would be a balanced budget. Not only would we be 10% less, which is where I think we should be striving for, you would end up with a balanced budget. In fact, we'd have $300,000 put into the reserves.
County Auditor Amber Farnan says the total budgeted expenditures are just over $28 million. However, Farnan notes the county rarely spends that full budgeted amount.
We have to budget for sometimes worst case scenario. And so usually we spend about 80 to 85% of our budget that's proposed. We usually don't spend it all. And so that negative you're seeing is partially because we are spending down some of the excess funds we have in general supplemental that we are required by law to have a smaller balance for, because we're only supposed to tax for what we need, which is what we're trying to do.
Budgets are also finalized for other city and county entities this week. Following a public hearing Tuesday night, the Glenwood City Council unanimously approved the city's budget for fiscal year 2027, which, say it all together now, begins July 1st. The move also followed a budget presentation by Glenwood City Administrator and Finance Director Mitch Kolf. Kolf says the budget includes a property tax rate of roughly $14.77 per $1,000 valuation, down from about $15.43 per $1,000 from the current fiscal year. And Kolf adds the general fund budget for fiscal 27 is up about $200,000 from the current fiscal year to cover $3.4 million, with the majority invested in public safety.
Police and fire and EMS combined make up 57.7% of general fund expenditures. Also in the budget is fire department growth. So it includes an addition of one full-time firefighter EMT position to bring the total from 7 to 8 full-time firefighters.
Montgomery County's budget is also set for next fiscal year. By unanimous vote Tuesday morning, the county's Board of Supervisors adopted and certified the county's fiscal 2027 budget. The supervisors took action after no one spoke at a public hearing and without written comments from residents. The board also unanimously approved a resolution setting elected official salaries for next fiscal year. Reading the resolution, Supervisor Mike Olson said most elected officials received a 3.75% increase, with the exception of the county attorney and sheriff, who received raises of 10% and 6.25% respectively.
Auditor, approved salary $83,412, approved increase 3.75%. County attorney, $100,293, approved increase of 10%. Recorder, approved salary of $78,165, approved increase of 3.75%. Sheriff, $130,792, approved salary and approved increase of 6.25%.
Olson, however, says the supervisors received no increase for fiscal 27.
Supervisors, $742,743, approved salary, zero increase. Chair stipend, $1,500, approved salary, and $1,500 increase. Treasurer, approved salary of $78,165, with an improved increase of 3.75%.
The Shenandoah School District's budget process also crossed the finish line this week. By unanimous vote, late Monday afternoon, the Shenandoah School Board approved the district's budget for fiscal year 2027, with a proposed property tax asking of approximately $1,347 per $1,000 valuation, a decrease of $1.09 per $1,000 from the current fiscal year's levy. Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Tuesday morning, Shenandoah School Superintendent Dr. Carrie Nelson says the district is pleased to decrease the levy for next fiscal year, which begins, say it all together now, July 1st.
We were able to reduce the levy, which is always a nice announcement to make. I mean, I've talked to you other years where we've had to make some increases, and so we feel really good about the efforts that we've made to increase our cash position over the last couple of years, and we had good dialogue about other areas where we can scale back but also continue to enhance our programming, and we feel really good about the work that we've done.
Still to come on This Week in KMA Land. We'll tell you all about the roundabout. Stay tuned. Iowa Department of Transportation officials hope to increase safety at a KMA Land intersection in a roundabout way. Plans for a proposed roundabout at the intersection of Highways 2 and 59 south of Shenandoah were unveiled at an open house of the Public Safety Center's Bricker Room late Thursday afternoon. DOT District 4 Regional Planner Scott Sewer told KMA News the roundabout is designed to improve traffic flow and reduce the number of accidents at the busy intersection.
Over the last 10 years, there's been over 23 crashes, with 3 fatal crashes and several severe accidents. And we looked at a four-way stop, we looked at a signalized intersection, we looked at an RCI, which is a reduced conflict intersection, and it was determined that a roundabout is a safer way to move traffic through that area.
Sir says numerous roundabouts are under construction or already built across Iowa.
As it has reduced speeds, it reduces conflict points in the intersection, where a normal four-way intersection would have 32 conflict points, a roundabout only has 8. Basically, it's free-flowing. Traffic moves through there. You yield to the vehicles within the circle. And it's been proven that it'll reduce the crash rate by over 37%, overall crashes. Reduce severe crashes by 76%. And it'll reduce fatal crashes by 90%.
Flanked by maps and toy vehicles, DOT officials fielded questions from the open house's attendees. Sources, one question asked was whether farm equipment could move through the roundabout. The answer is yes.
They're designed with an inside mountable pavement that you can get up on if you need to get around there, or a semi, and even wind turbines, as long as they are, can maneuver through a roundabout.
Plans call for the roundabout's construction to begin in 2027.
We're going to try to put a time restriction in there for the contractor of 60 days. There'll be a detour in place during that time, and then after the 60 days, hopefully the roundabout will be opened back up, or the new roundabout will be opened up.
Residents unable to attend Thursday's open house have until April 29th to comment online. More about the proposed Highway 259 roundabout and a public comment section is available on the DOT's website, And there's a link with a web story at KMALand.com. More properties in Shenandoah, including a small piece of the city's history, are targeted for demolition. By unanimous vote Tuesday night, the Shenandoah City Council approved the solicitation of bids for demolition and cleanup of five city-owned properties. They include a structure at 608 Sportsman's Park, the former Shenandoah Swimming Pool Bathhouse located between the Wilson Aquatic Center and Elijah Baldwin Field. Shenandoah City Administrator A.J. Lyman tells KMA News the city found other uses for the building after it was abandoned following the new pool's construction.
That had been used as storage by the Parks Department forever, and now with the acquisition of the new armory, we don't really need it anymore, and it leaks pretty bad anyway, so good time to go ahead and tear it down.
Lyman says the other four are nuisance properties.
We have residences at 102 West Sheridan, 300 University, 402 West Valley, and 319 East Washington was a grocery store way before my time around here, but it's needs to come down as well.
Prospective demolition contractors have until May 7th to submit bids to City Hall. In other business, the council approved the city's fiscal 2027 budget by unanimous vote after no one spoke at the second public hearing at the beginning of the meeting. Council members also approved a temporary exclusion of Chapter 93 of the city's water conservation ordinance to fill the outdoor pool for this summer. Both the city's Park and Recreation Board and City Water Superintendent Tim Martin recommended filling the pool. Federal funding is fortifying plans for a Page County Bridge project. Page County Engineer J.D. King announced at the county supervisors meeting Tuesday afternoon that the Redwood Avenue Bridge over the Neely Bridge had received a grant through the U.S. Department of Transportation's Competitive Highway Bridge Program. King says the award will cover a good portion of the cost to replace the aging structure built in the 1960s north of Clarinda.
We're funded $1.2 million extra bridge money, and then we take some of our bridge money and we take some match to work the rest of it out. But we have acquired extra bridge money through that program. We've done the survey and the...
However, King says the project is likely still a couple of years down the road due to all of the projects in the bundle submitted to the program by the Iowa County Engineers Association for bid at the same time.
The bundle consists of a bridge in Bott County and two bridges in Guthrie County. We're the only counties that have successful applications in the Southwest, and so we're all together are a bundle. So we have to have the letting at the same time. So the letting is tentatively scheduled from in the area of mid-year 2027 or early 2028. So it's several years away.
Plans call for replacing the existing structure with a concrete beam bridge spanning 188 feet and 30 feet wide, estimated at $1.7 million. At a previous meeting, King said the structure was beginning to show its age.
It's in poor condition. There's severe corrosion on the abutment piling, probably due to anti-icing chemicals used over the years. This bridge was built in 1962. It's 157 foot long, 28 foot wide between the curbs, and four steel beam bridge. Getting to the end of its useful life, although it's not weight limited yet, we don't want to let it deteriorate to it where it is weight limited.
While the bridge might not be utilized by everyone in the county, King says the grant funds open up other dollars for projects across the county. Legislators are heading toward the 2026 Iowa legislative session's finish line, with property tax reform still hanging in the balance. State Representative Dave Seek and State Senator Mark Costello summarized the trio of proposals still working their way through the statehouse at last Saturday's legislative briefing in Malvern. The Iowa Senate passed its version, Senate File 2472, by a bipartisan 41-4 vote earlier this month. Primarily, the bill would set a soft cap on city and county revenue growth at 2% to 5% annually, based on inflation. Costello says compromise is needed between legislators and Governor Kim Reynolds' proposals.
Now, the governor's proposal and the House's proposal have a pretty hard cap at, I think, 2% or so. Ours is like at 5%, and it's only on a couple different levies. So I view that as a little bit of a... Makes it a little easier for some of these local entities to, be flexible and do what they need to do as far as levies.
Costello says the bill addresses concerns from local entities with older populations by tying the state's fuel tax to inflation rather than the current 30 cents per gallon of gasoline and 32.5 cents for diesel. Fuel with higher ethanol blends, such as E15, has a slightly lower fuel tax of 26.5 cents per gallon. The full House has yet to take action on its proposal, House File 2745, which passed the Ways and Means Committee late last month. SEEK notes that property tax reform is a complicated topic built on decades of legislation that have made slight changes over the years.
You got to remember, it's been 150 years in the making. All these laws getting stacked on top of laws on top of laws. And, you know, it's hard to unwind something that took 150 years to get here. So that's part of the issue. And everybody has a different idea.
Some residents in attendance aired concerns about provisions in both the House and the governor's proposals, including Glenwood School District Finance Officer Tim Reinert. Primarily regarding the governor's proposal, Reinert says the bill would greatly increase the amount of Secure and Advanced Vision for Education or SAVE funds, which are typically reserved for school infrastructure improvements, that is transferred towards property tax relief over the next few years.
What they're proposing is diverting 30% of that funding source instead of 7%, which is done today, which that costs both county cities and schools $1.8 million annually. So please don't touch those two funding streams for public entities.
Though the legislature's scheduled final day of the 2026 session is Tuesday, the session could go longer, but lawmakers will no longer receive their per diem pay after April 21st. Well, legislators took time out Wednesday afternoon to honor an outgoing KMA Land lawmaker. By unanimous voice vote, the Iowa Senate approved a resolution recognizing the retirement of State Senator Tom Shipley, who has served in the State Senate since 2014. Shipley announced earlier this year he would not seek re-election to the Senate's 9th District. State Senator Ken Rosenboom introduced the legislation and outlined Shipley's efforts at the State House over the past 12 years.
During his time in the Senate, Senator Shipley strongly advocated for the needs of rural schools by ensuring continued funding for operational sharing and transportation equity, and was instrumental in the process of building the new veterinary diagnostic lab at Iowa State University of Science and Technology, helped increase railroad responsiveness and cooperation throughout this state, and supported historic tax cuts to give the state a competitive edge.
Several state senators from both parties shared personal and professional stories about their time with Shipley, including fellow KMA Land lawmaker Dan Dawson. The Council Plus Republican thanked Shipley for his willingness to take tough decisions for his support when he first decided to run for the State House in 2015. Recalling when Shipley went door knocking through the hills of eastern Pottawatomie County.
But this man right here put in more miles than I ever would have expected because he believed in me. Other people, it's kind of like, yeah, nice, give it a shot, kid, pat you on the head and walk away and like one more carcass, but not Tom. When you did that, it became part of our family. And we'd often talk, oftentimes too, when Tom was out first door knocking east side of Council Bluffs, how little Alex and Madeline were. And you got to see him grow up. We got to grow up with you.
State Senator Tony B. Sigdano also reflected on the friendship he developed with Shipley over the years. The Polk County Democrat also commended Shipley for breaking partisan lines on certain legislation. Following the Senate's approval of the resolution, Shipley also reflected on his time at the State House. The Ottawa Republican will particularly miss the people he got to work with, including his friendship with B. Sigdano.
I have been privileged to meet some of the finest people I have ever known. Some have come and gone, and some still remain. The mystery I've had for 12 years is, how did a farm kid from Adams County ever get to be a good friend with an Italian guy from South Des Moines? And the only thing we had in common is the love of good Italian food. But it has been a relationship that I just never would have dreamed of, and sir, I will treasure forever.
Shipley also took time to recognize the staff and assistants he worked with over the past several years. Cass County Supervisor Steve Beyer is the lone registered candidate for Shipley's seat. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.